Today is Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. This is part 9 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Charlie Schulz. Charlie spells his last name S-C-H-U-L-Z. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Charlie. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Tom. I'm just fine. Thank you.
Great. Charlie, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
You do have my permission.
Thank you. We left off last time. The Rim to Rim that you organized in 1992, where Jennifer Henderson just crushed it, 34-year-old female, with the best time. Oh, that's just a great story. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said it was great.
Yeah, just amazing. Can you pick that story up again? What happened the next year?
Well, in 1992 was one of the bigger years. And 1993, 94, 95, and 96, I don't have a lot of the information that I had for the other years. And I'm sorry, I don't know why.
No worries.
I can kind of, I did keep track of my time because they were in my journal.
Okay.
So for 93, it was 555, 94, 617, and 95, 705, and then 906, 715. I can, the 3 years, 93, 94, 95, I really can't tell you much except in 1995, I did get a letter. I think it was like late September of 1995, or maybe even early September, from the Grand Canyon Park Service. Actually, it was from the director of the park at that time. And I was told that they were aware that I had been organizing a rim-to-rim run, and that a competitive event was not allowed in the Grand Canyon, and that I had to stop. I wasn't quite sure how they found out. I don't know if it was by somehow correlating our room reservations on each side for several years or what. But anyway, I appealed. I said we had at that time around 20 people signed up, and several of them were coming from out of state. We had the hotel reservations. People had plane reservations. And I was surprised. They said, okay, for 1995, go ahead, but don't do it again. So we did proceed in 1995 to do another rim-to-rim. We didn't have anybody come to the trailhead or anybody check on us on either end, so I'm not sure how much they were concerned about it. But that kind of ended it for me as far as being an organizer. I said, well, they knew who I was. They had my name. They were going to, certainly if I had tried to organize again the next year, I was going to be in trouble. And I already knew that there had been some people that had been arrested for organizing one out of San Diego who weren't very subtle. Theirs was in a running newspaper, and, it was, ours was more word of mouth. So anyway, I said, I'm done. So two of the people that were part of the group, Park Odom, who was one of the people that has helped me through the whole time we did these runs, and a friend of his named Andre Duhane, decided they would run it for another year.
Can you spell their names for me?
Okay. Park is P-A-R-K-E, Odom, H-A-U-T-E-M, and Andre is A-N-D-R-E. And I've got to look at the spelling of his last name. D-U-H-A-I-M-E.
Okay. And how did you know Andre and Park? And you talked about Park some last time.
Yeah.
I think
Park and I worked together. When I started working in Phoenix for at that time, which was GT Laboratories, Park was working for, I think it was one of the Bell companies in Texas. And they sent some of the people from the phone companies at the different parts of the United States to work with us in the laboratories, because we were designing a new cell phone switching system, and they wanted to make sure they had some input into it because they knew they were going to have to buy it. It was kind of mandated that they couldn't buy it from anybody else. They had to buy it from us. So they wanted to make sure they had as much influence as possible.
Okay.
So Park moved to the Phoenix area to be part of that group from the phone companies.
Hmm.
He had had several jobs in GTE over the years. And so when the company, the part I worked for, GTE Laboratories, went out and recruited, hired some of the people from the phone companies, Park was one of the ones they hired. So in addition to him being there working as part of the phone companies, he then got hired by our company to continue to work in sales, not in engineering anymore.
Okay.
But when he did that, he and I had by then developed friendship and had been running together and everything. Andre was a friend of his from Park's days back in the operating companies, and Andre had worked for GTE Indiana. And so when as things developed, of course, Andre found out about this. Andre, in fact, was, for one of the earlier ones, he was the one that rode around in the bus and sat up front and then kept track of the people when they were coming out and everything like that.
Hmm.
He wasn't a participant per se, but he was he went around or went along in the van early and then in the bus. And then he decided finally he was going to get in shape and tried it, and he did. He didn't do terribly great, but he did. I shouldn't say that. I had my days, too. But his best time was right around 550, so that wasn't
wow.
bad at all.
Okay.
So, yeah, huh. And he was kind of a short, punchy kind of guy, so he did pretty good working himself into shape. So
nice.
Anyway, the two of them decided, well, they could run this. Well, after 1 year, they decided, hey, this is harder than we thought, more than we want to do, so we're not going to do it anymore. So they stopped and didn't go on to do it anymore. So
did they get a letter from the park, or did they just say,
no,
we're not going to do it?
No.
Okay.
They just kind of decided, you know, like I said, they just decided that it was much more difficult than they wanted. And it wasn't really that difficult. They were just at points in their life where they had a lot of other things going on and
mm-hmm.
just decided
mm-hmm.
they didn't want to do it anymore as far as organizing. Mm-hmm. And I think they kind of lost the interest personally of even doing it, because by then we'd done it for at least 10 years
mm.
and maybe a little longer, maybe 11 years, somewhere in there. So it was kind of dying anyway. You know, the group was getting smaller. There were a few that wanted to keep going, but nobody that really wanted to pick it up. So
right.
that kind of made 1996 the last one.
Do you have...
And that was on October 6th.
Do you have that that letter with you still?
You know, I've looked for it, and I've got to look again, because I thought I kept it, but it wasn't in the file with the running things.
Hmm.
But it could be in one of the other ones, because I, you know, just kind of...
Yeah.
Not that great a filer sometimes.
Okay.
So I am going to go through and look through if I can find that, and if I can, I will... send you a copy, and then the person I sent the other stuff on the
to
way.
To Kim. Yeah, Kim
Beeson.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it would be good to know how the park was viewing this, you know, almost 30 years ago now. It's 2023 now. You know, to know that this was a problem with them then, and why, what were their concerns? And it's kind of nice to know that you appealed it. You wrote back and said, look, here's what's going on, and that the park said okay.
Yeah. That part really surprised me. But evidently the person on the other end was at least... I think part of it was we had never made a big deal out of it. You know, we had
right.
never put a band over the trailhead. We'd never... The T-shirts didn't get handed out until you're in the bus on the way home and things like that, so... Like I said, I'm not sure how they found out. I'm pretty sure it was nobody in the group, because there's only the group that had a reason to tell them.
Right. And your numbers were small,
right.
you know, a couple dozen people. It wasn't like you were advertising nationally.
Nope.
And it seemed as though, if I get this right, and we haven't talked in detail about the 93 through 95 runs, 92 through 95, that it's not like you had a lot of people that were causing a lot of resource troubles for the park, you know, needed evacuation or assistance right. by rangers, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, in that respect, for the whole time that we ran this, we never had to have anybody hauled out.
Okay.
I told you about the one person went in and called, and they told him, you're doing great. Just rest, drink some water, and walk out.
Yeah.
And we had one person on the way down, actually, even before he got to Roaring Springs, kicked one of the water bars and drove his toenail up, his big toenail up into his toe.
Ooh.
And when he got across, it was pretty bloody, but he persisted and made it out. One of the guys had a big blister that was about the size of probably 6 inches long and 2 inches wide on the bottom of 1 foot by the time he got out. And he went up to see the medical people, and they said, oh, we know what you were doing. So they lanced it, drained it, and everything like that. And it took a little while for that to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the most serious injuries that we had.
Okay.
Nobody gave up. Nobody called for help other than Rex at one time. He turned out around and walked out. So.
Mm.
And like I said, Rex has gone on to do 50 of those. So
yeah.
He figured it out.
Well, 1995, that superintendent at the time might have been Rob Arnberger. I'm not quite exactly sure on that.
For some reason, in my mind, it was a woman, but I may be wrong, too.
Well, if you find that letter, it'd certainly be good to know.
Yeah.
And you participated in the 96 run?
Yes. Yeah, okay. As a participant. Yep, just went along for the ride. Then.
And what was that like for you, having organized this so many times? What was it like just to follow orders from somebody else?
Yeah, well, it was also kind of a pain in the butt because they kept saying things like, well, Charlie, when you organize this, you know, out loud, because they knew I'd gotten this letter. And so they all thought it was kind of funny. but when they could, they'd make a comment like, "What? How many people did you organize for this year, Charlie?" You know, and things like that. Out loud, so that if anybody else heard it, they'd think I had organized it. I didn't think that was particularly funny.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, at the time I felt, you know, all I needed is a ranger come up and arrest me and that would be it. But,
right.
It didn't happen. And, you know, at the time it was a little bothersome, but since then, you know, it's boys will be boys sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it easier for you, though, not to have to, you know, coordinate buses and hotel rooms and, you know?
Oh, yeah, that part was a lot easier.
Okay.
All I had to do was be there.
Yeah.
And, be ready to go. So I didn't have a great time that time as far as my time getting across the canyon. But from the point of view of no effort, it was great.
Okay.
I didn't have to do a thing. They didn't even ask me much. I think they kind of thought that they could figure it out.
Hmm.
And the big deal was I told them, I said, if you don't make the reservation by December of some kind, we're not going to have any place to stay.
Right.
And that's December for the next October. And so that was the one thing, that if that didn't happen, you weren't going to have an event because you weren't going to have your room.
Let me make sure I understand this correctly. So September of the year before, you were making your reservations for the next year's October?
December.
In December, you were making your reservations for the next year's October.
Right.
Okay.
And at that time, I kind of had to have an idea how many people, because, I mean, we put two people to a room, and, you know, 10 or 15, 10 or 12, you know, depending, and that kind of is where I cut it off as far as people. And then I would start a wait list, and the first people that had started out with me at the beginning always had priority. If they wanted to go, they were going to go, even if they hadn't gone for a couple of years, they were going to get to go. Then the next one were people that, you know, came on a year or two later, and it kind of went through the list that way as far as priorities. And the new people were always, you know, if you had never gone before, you went to the bottom and you waited and till I was full up and I told them no, or I had a couple of things at the end and I'd bring them on.
Okay. So you had kind of like a waiting list, and that was...
Yeah, I had a waiting list that I only had drawn it a couple times, but there were always a couple people, and it was surprising. Some people would sign up, and then, you know, a month ahead would drop out, and I would, you know, get a hold of some of these people, and they'd say, sure, I still want to go.
Okay.
So, yeah, which was surprising, because, of course, unless they had kept their training up of some kind, they wouldn't actually be able to do that.
But. Right. And I think I asked you about this, but just to be sure, do you have any idea how many other work groups or teams of runners, people that knew each other through work or community, church, whatever, were doing this as well?
The only other group I knew of at the time was, and I think I mentioned this, was Honeywell. It was a company in Phoenix.
Yes.
And they had a running club that was there within their company. And we did, too, within our company. But that running club did start organizing. And Honeywell had a much bigger operation there in the Phoenix area than we did.
Hmm.
So they always outnumbered us when they started. But they didn't start, I don't think, until like 1990, maybe, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay.
So for the first 10 years, we never saw anybody else. Once in a while, we'd see a lone runner. You know, I think I told you that. You know, somebody'd be doing it by themselves, and maybe they had a wife at Phantom Ranch or something that was helping them, and some that were doing rim to rim to rim, and somebody was helping them. But no major groups until Honeywell started.
Okay. And, of course, you'd have to be there. I mean, I would assume other groups might have been saying, well, we're gonna actually run on a Thursday, or we're not gonna run on a weekend. We're gonna actually try to run midweek or something like that. Try to stay even more under the radar.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and that may have been going on. I don't know.
Right. Was that your last rim to rim in 1995?
No, I did that one in 96. Then that Park and Andre organized.
I'm sorry. And then, 1986.
Yeah, and then 1997, CL, Joe Blue, and I went up and did a double. We went over one day and we came back the next day.
Ah.
And Frank Barrios was the one that drove for us. So he hauled us up there. The four of us went up in Frank's vehicle.
Okay.
And we stayed on South Rim. We went over, and Frank drove around and had our bags and everything. We hung around on the North Rim, and then the next morning came back.
Oh,
and
wow.
Frank picked us up and brought us back. But okay. It was just the four of us, and just CL and Joe and myself as far as runners. Frank was our driver.
Who did the arranging for that? Did you do the arranging?
Yeah.
Okay. And were you worried at all with the park? Are you like, hey, you know, it's just us. It's a small group of us. We're just friends. This is not organized like at all. Were you?
No, that one didn't bother me at all. I mean, we were, you know, there are three people. I mean, mm-hmm. what could they say? It's a lot different than when we had 15, 20, or almost 30 people.
Yeah.
And I understood their concern. But by that time, there were other people doing rim to rims. They were starting to see an increase in the number of bodies. So we were just another two or three guys that were doing it. And certainly the hotel rooms, even if that was the kind of thing they were tracking, we only had two rooms on each side. We didn't have 15 or, you know, anything like that.
Right. And by 96 and 97, were you getting any stares from backpackers, or was anybody saying anything or mumbling or grumbling as you, but you weren't like it with a time like 7 hours, you're basically fast walking, right? You're not like running full speed.
Right. Yeah. And we did get comments from people. And,
did you, what kind of comments did you get?
You know, sometimes, especially places like Indian Garden, where we'd stop for a few minutes, maybe fill up on water or something like that, and you'd see some people standing there, and they'd say, what are you doing? I'd say, oh, we're going Rim-to-Rim, and why don't you enjoy it and stuff like that, or, oh, you're one of those guys, and that kind of stuff. And so there were some negative. Some of it just, wow, you're doing that? When did you start? You know, how long have you been doing this? Have you done this before? But there were a few negative ones.
But there were some positive, too.
Pardon?
But there were some positive, too.
Yeah. There were admiration type things. You know, yeah. Like, wow, you're really able to do that? And I never would have thought anybody could do that, you know, and things like that.
Mm.
So, you know, there were things in that respect that were kind of nice to hear from people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that probably outweighed the negative, because on that trail, a lot of the people are, and I don't mean this the wrong way, but they're amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not heavy-duty backpackers. This is probably their only adventure into the Grand Canyon for the majority of them. So they're kind of in awe of themselves, and then when they see somebody else who's doing it a little tougher, they're even, you know, a little more impressed, I guess. That's all I can think of to say.
Uh-huh.
But if it were one of the other trails, you know, where you'd come across somebody out in the middle of nowhere going down, I don't know, there's a couple of places you could have done sort of runs and things. It would have been harder, but, you know, maybe North and South Bass or something like that. But there, and see, Ellen, I did do, you know, some of our trips were fairly quick. And we would see people when we were hiking, backpacking, even said, oh, you're going through here awful quick, you know. And that was just our way of doing it. I don't think we felt we missed anything. But by the same token, we had a little more endurance, and so we were willing to go farther than some of the other people might go in a day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that even proved true on our last backpacking trip that CL and I did was in 2001, which we can talk about later. But even in that one, we had a permit, I think, for like 5 days, and we were done in 3.5.
Okay.
So it just, we got to book it, and we didn't carry a lot of weight normally, especially as we got more experience. We weren't cutting off the end of our toothbrush or anything like that, but we certainly were much more frugal on what we did carry.
Okay.
And what we could get by with. So, I mean, even these Rim-to-Rim runs, that was some of the things people were surprised by. A lot of times, we only had one or two water bottles, not the big ones, just the small ones.
Mm-hmm.
But we figured if we really needed water coming down, we could dip it out of the creek.
Right.
And yeah, you may get sick, but you're not going to get sick that day. It'll probably be the next day or the day after.
Right.
And in most cases, two water bottles would get you to Cottonwood, or one water bottle would get you to Cottonwood. And if you filled up there, that next section, although it's one of the longer sections from Cottonwood to Phantom Ranch, two water bottles was plenty.
Right.
And then coming out of Phantom Ranch and out of the campground, right there at the before you cross the bridge, there's a place you could get water. And you cross the new bridge and start up with two water bottles.
Right.
You get to Indian Gardens, then you can drop back to one water bottle because you had water at 3 mile and a mile and a half house.
Right.
So we kind of had these things figured out. I know I had one of my wife's nephews came out here with some friends, and they were going to go down to the river back in one day.
Mm.
And I said, well, you know, plan, make sure you had, you know, some water and stuff. And they end up carrying like 2 gallons down each. And
oh,
like
my.
And I said, my God, you're not that much water. What were you doing? And they took them like 12 hours to go to the river and back. And
yeah.
I thought, well, probably because you're carrying so much damn water. And I think part of it was they didn't quite trust me as I was a lot older than they were. And so it was kind of like, does the old man know what he's talking about?
Right, right.
But they were on the trail like 8 or 9 in the morning, and they weren't out until 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So, and that was just going down South Kaiba and coming up Bright Angel. So.
Okay. Well, it's a challenge no matter how you do it. But, yeah, you definitely don't need that kind of water.
And we took some risks because a lot of times we were just in T-shirts and shorts and no jackets, no sweaters, nothing. So if the weather changed abruptly on the South Rim coming out, we could have had some bad problems. But knock on wood, we never did.
Yeah.
We were lucky. We were really lucky.
Okay. So that was your first double cross, was in 97.
Yeah.
And how did... Well,
it was the first one. Yeah. It was actually, I did one way back before. I think I told you I stayed in Cottonwood and went to the North Rim and spent a day or two and then went back. But it wasn't a rim to rim to rim on 2 days.
Right.
This is the first time in 2 days.
And how was that?
Terrible.
Okay.
On the way back, I thought, man, I'll never make it. So, but I did. I mean, I don't know if I didn't train hard enough or whatever. You know, I got over there just fine. But when it came back the next morning to turn around and come back, I just didn't feel I had what I needed to do it. And that might have been part of it. I just hadn't talked myself into thinking it was a good idea. Joe and CL did fine.
I'm amazed that they did, because you live in Phoenix. You're sleeping at altitude, which, you know, you're supposed to play high and sleep low.
Right.
And you guys were playing low and sleeping high, and then you run all day, and then you sleep high again on the other rim and turn around and come back, and you're hematocrit. You just don't have enough red blood cells to carry the oxygen your body needs, and you feel like dirt. And so I'm amazed that CL and Joe were doing better.
Huh. Yeah, and they were both older than me. I mean, CL was 12 years older than I was, and I think Joe's about four years older than I am.
Hmm.
So they weren't young enough. Now, we did have a prep run that was in the Grand Canyon on July 12th. CL and Joe and I went down the Bright Angel, down the Bright Angel, from the Bright Angel over to the South Kaibab Trailhead on the mule route, and then down the South Kaibab and then up to Bright Angel. We did that in 6 hours.
Wait. Let me make sure I understand this route. So you went down the Bright Angel?
No. We started from the Bright Angel Trailhead.
Right.
And took the mule trail over to the South Kaibab trail.
Got it. Oh, so you ran that trail to the South Kaibab, went down the South Kaibab to the river?
Yep. And then back up Bright Angel.
Crossed the Black Bridge?
We went down and took the river trail.
Oh, took the river trail over. Okay. So that cut off a little bit, but still. And then back up again.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think people were doing that often? That, you know, basically it is a rim to rim, but it's just not north rim, south rim. It's south rim, south rim. You're going down basically almost all the way to the river. Well, gee, when you do the river trail, the Pipe Creek, you're within 50 feet up above the river there on the trail. So that's close enough, I suppose. And then up you go.
Well, you know, I went down and did the same thing one of the times. Park and his wife were going to pick up a raft trip at Phantom Ranch. And so I went down with them, down South Kaibab. They got on the raft, and then I went back up Bright Angel. So
wow.
It was, I had done that before. And I did just to go along with them. It was, at that time, and this is the mid-90s, we had started doing longer and longer runs on trail runs. So there's one that I wrote down here, the Mazatzal Divide Trail. On the Arizona Trail, we did a chunk that was 30 miles long, and we did it about 11 hours. Now, that one, the three of us, it's really a rugged part. We had to do some trail finding. So we took a long time on that one.
Hmm.
But then CL was running the Highline 50 miler at that time.
Oh, wow.
So he did that April 26th. And Joe and I supported him on that. We didn't run that, but he was doing that. We were also doing, there was one in the, just out of Phoenix, the mountains that are off to the west. There's that little town up there, the old mining town. It's up Bloody Basin and up, what's that little town?
Crown King,
yeah. They started running, there was a trail run that started being run from down by Lake Pleasant up the back way up to Crown King.
Oh, well.
And, pardon?
I said, oh, wow.
Well, we started running that several years in a row, right around that same time in the mid-90s.
Huh.
And we started then. That was the first time I kind of became aware of the Arizona Trail. There had been a book published, and I think I still got mine, one of the first books that came out on the Arizona Trail, and there were still chunks of it that hadn't been well-defined yet. So we started running Arizona Trail in pieces, and Frank would drop us off, and he'd go do something, and then he would pick us up, you know, 20, 25 miles down the trail at another trailhead. And we'd do that sometimes two nights. We'd go out, especially on a holiday weekend or something, and we would run on, we'd drive out there, and we'd be there Friday night to camp or stay in a hotel, run Saturday, stay overnight, run Sunday, and then drive back to Phoenix. And so we would have two good, usually 15 to 25-mile range somewhere in there, two of them back-to-back, and that on those weekends, trying to get as much of the Arizona Trail done as we could just by running it. We didn't want to backpack it or anything like that. We were running it.
Wow.
That was Joe and CL and Park once in a while, and a few other people would come once in a while for one or two legs or something like that, but mostly Joe and CL and myself were the biggest part.
And did you complete the entire Arizona Trail running?
No, well, part of it wasn't defined, and so we did about 550 some miles of it.
Wow!
But we never hit the last couple hundred that after they finally got it worked out. You know, and there was a part like in Saguaro National Park on the east side. They didn't even have that set up, I don't think, until like 2010 or 2012.
Okay.
And they defined a trail that went from that cave over there, Colossal Cave, up into the Rincons and over.
Yep.
So when we ran it at that time, before that, there were two trails that came up off the backside, Miller Creek and something else. And we ran those up Miller Creek and over the top and down to Italian Spring and where the road goes between the Rincons and the Catalinas.
Right.
And goes over to the San Pedro River on the other side.
Yes.
And so we got picked up there, you know. And then another day we ran from there over to the prison camp. And then we did the prison camp up to the top. And then from the top down to Oracle. And, you know, that's kind of the way we do it in chunks.
Okay. And so you'd need sag support. You need somebody to drive for you, but you just basically run the distance with a couple of bottles of water and call it good.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
For the parts that were defined, and some parts have changed, you know, quite a bit now.
Mm-hmm.
But there were ways, even from the beginning, that you would end up on some Forest Service roads and things like that, where now they're on trails. And so it's changed in a lot of regards, but in several places, like the Grand Canyon, they put in a section from the North Kaibab Trailhead it would just be to the east of the gate when you come in. There's that little cabin back in the woods there where Ranger stays, I think, and there's they keep a couple of tractors and stuff back there. Just when you're coming in the north entrance.
Yep.
Off to the left.
Yeah.
There's a cabin back in.
That's right.
And a couple of other things. Well, they put the trail from the North Kaibab up under the power line. It was a terrible way to do it because you're in the sun the whole day.
Ooh.
But all the way up to that cabin, farther east of that cabin ways, and then you came back down onto the plateau. And then on the plateau, the trails are beautiful. They picked up trails that evidently had been there for a long time and established those all the way up to the Utah border.
Hmm.
And that section, we all ran that together. I didn't run that one section on the Grand Canyon until like 2013 or 14 when I was doing volunteer work up there. And the volunteer coordinator I mentioned the other day, Todd Nelson, he took me up and dropped me off up where it entered the park up by the front entrance, or the entrance on the north rim, And then I ran back down to the to our campground down there by the North Kaibab Trailhead. And it was a terrible piece of trail. I mean, you know, they had to clear a way in order to get that power line in. So in doing so, there's no shade. You were out in the sun the whole time, and it was just a slog. But I got it done. That was the only thing bad for this at the time.
Okay. So let's run back to Grand Canyon again.
Yep.
Your last then rim to rim was a double in 1997.
Yes.
Yeah. So did you keep backpacking in Grand Canyon?
No, we really started doing all these longer runs, and then CL moved to Colorado in 2000, or 1999, let me see here. He moved in 1999, right at the end of 1999. He moved to Colorado up to Loveland. So he would keep coming down, though. They had a condo timeshare in Sedona, and he still had a daughter, two daughters at that time, stepdaughter and one of his actual daughters still living in the Phoenix area. So they would come down, and so we would get together, and he wanted to tie together. When you look at his map as far as what he had done in the canyon with me and before me and on a couple occasions without me because I was having my own thing going on, he pretty much had done on one side or the other from one end of the canyon to the other. And the only part he didn't really have was from where we were on Great Thumb over towards the South Pass, and then from the South Pass over to Hermit.
Okay.
All the, what do they call them, the jewels?
Yeah.
All those. So that was the last one he and I did, and we backpacked South Pass to Hermit. And then again, Frank dropped us off at the trailhead on the South Pass. And we went down, and we camped at Ruby, and we ran into a woman named Denise from the Grand Canyon Institute. And she was doing a through hike or something along there. And this was April 16th of 2001.
Okay.
And then we went on, and this is one that we did, I think, we either had a 4 or 5 day pass, but we jumped one of our places we were supposed to stay, and we stayed just outside of the campground. If you come down the Hermit, down to Hermit's the site where they had the big camp and all that. And we stayed just outside of there. And then the next morning, we just chugged through there and on up to the rim. And at that time, it was still before they closed that road. It was April.
Okay.
So Frank met us out there at Hermit's Rest.
Okay.
And it didn't, you know, it wasn't a continuous quite, but it pretty much tied together from the stuff he did when he worked in the Marble Canyon when he was doing survey work, and then, you know, the other trips that we had in there, and then the one that he did for the asbestos mine.
Right.
And then when we went up and crossed over to cross the river and then came down Phantom Canyon or Phantom Creek down into Phantom Ranch and onto the Thunder River and all those kind of stuff. So he had kind of been in big chunks all the way across. And he just, this was one he just kind of had on his map that didn't have anything in it. So we did that. And at that time, he's 2001, so he was probably real close to 70.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's what it was. Boucher to Hermit to the Rim.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, we stayed outside of Boucher.
Yeah.
And we did it by, and because of April, it was kind of hot. We did, we knew if you don't do that kind of thing in April, you just run out of water off the South Rim.
So right.
We would get up early, eat breakfast, boogie as far as we could before it started getting hot. Then we would lay up under shade somewhere and sleep or rest or have a lunch and hang out till about 4. And it was light enough then, though, you could get up. You could then do another 3 hours before the sun went down.
You bet.
So around three or so, we'd pack up again, and then we'd boogie until 7, 7:30, and then have something to eat when we got there at night. And the next day, we did it the same way. So that's the way we made our time through there. We had one day that was 18 miles.
Okay. And you're moving fast with a pack now. This isn't it isn't just like you got a couple of water bottles here. You actually have you're packing light though.
Yeah, but I carried a bivy sack, no sleeping bag, and Cial carried a small sleeping bag. We didn't have a tent. We didn't have any change of clothes. We did have rain coat in case it rained, but we didn't expect that.
Okay.
So we were pretty light.
Yeah. Okay. I've got another event I need to move along to, so maybe this is a good time to put a comma in this interview series here. Does that sound good? Does that sound all right, Charlie?
Yeah, I just want to comment. Now, I don't know, that one was in 2001, and that kind of ended the backpacking, and really, I did have a couple raft trips in between, or one raft trip in between, no, two, that I can talk about between one before 2001 and then another one like in 2012 or so. But then most of my activities shifted to doing volunteer work in the park on either the north or south rim as a leader for Sierra Club trips. I don't know if you're interested in that or not. Or
I am.
If you...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's pick that up next time, your raft trips, and then,
okay.
And then we'll see how far we get through that, and definitely want to know about your volunteer work, there. So that all sounds good.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I got away from the backpacking. I mean, we did camp, we camped on both sides, but mm-hmm. it wasn't backpacking, park camping and doing work on the rims and sometimes down a little ways, but nothing very far.
No, that sounds good. Super. Okay. All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and conclude part 9 of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Charlie Schultz. Today is Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Charlie, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.